evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 18, 2017. President Kiir declares a state of emergency in his home state and three other areas.
The state of emergency brings in restrictions, gives powers, more powers to the government to take steps that may not be necessarily prescribed in the law. This is likely to affect the rights of citizens in those locations.
And a veteran South Sudanese journalist has joined politics.
I cannot say I look while my people are suffering either in exile or in the bushes, you know. So that's why I decided that I should do something. I should go to Parliament and raise the voice of the people of Kwajukeji.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has declared a state of emergency for 3 months in his home state of Goguryeo, where clashes have raged for months between clan-based militias. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay told Reuters news agency that the South Sudan Army would be given powers to stop the fighting in Goguryeo and that citizens' rights would be suspended. He did not elaborate on the type of rights that would be affected by the state of emergency declaration in Goguryeo, Tonj, Wau, and Awel East. There have been reports of clashes in Goguryeo between militiamen from the Apuk and Agwak clans. In 2014, President Kiir declared a state of emergency in Jonglei and Unity States, where fighting raged for months between the South Sudan Army and rebels loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar. Civil society activists fear the move will hinder the work of humanitarian workers operating in the area and contradict the spirit of the national dialogue Mr. Kiir launched recently. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the Juba-based civil society group South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says, calling for a state of emergency in Greater Bahar Ghazal will embolden soldiers to take matters into their own hands.
The state of emergency brings in restrictions, gives powers, more powers to the government to take steps that may not be necessarily prescribed in the law. This is likely to affect the rights of citizens in those locations. It is likely to limit the enjoyment of their rights in every sense.
Mohandis believes the decision to place 4 states under emergency laws was prompted by intercommunal violence and a general state of insecurity.
In those areas where the state of emergency has been declared, people are dying of violence, intercommunal violence. And when you look at other parts of the country, people die of other different causes. People die of hunger, people die of attacks on the roads and so on. So it is generally a situation that is all over the country.
And Mohandis says, the state of emergency declaration will not end insecurity and instability across the country. He says, what South Sudan needs is not piecemeal solutions, but rather a comprehensive one that addresses the general state of insecurity and the country's economic crisis. Bongiri Peter, executive director of the civil society group Humanity South Sudan, says, the government must ensure that the state of emergency does not impede the work of humanitarian agencies working to provide food and health care to those in need.
Some of the restrictions must not go to impede the work of humanitarian organizations and the agencies that are delivering services there, because the curfew might go to all sectors, and sometimes it's going to be very difficult for some people who are working on the area of service delivery.
Melania Ito, who works for the Solidarity for Women's Rights Association, or SOWA, says, the declaration of the state of emergency in Bahar Ghazal is ill-timed.
Currently, we are heading for the issue of national dialogue. As a civil society organization, it will affect some of our colleagues who are working in the area. They will be affected because they are not going to have enough freedom of movement, enough freedom of speech, as you know that some people take it in a wrong way.
Munir Morris Togo, who also works for SOWA, says, The state of emergency is going to isolate large and important parts of the country at a time when South Sudanese need to come together and talk about how to bring back lasting peace.
Geographically, if you exclude the Bahr al-Ghazal with this state of emergency, then the other way around you are going to stop this work of national dialogue. And yet, this national dialogue is the way to the peace agreement and to reestablishing the structure of the South Sudanese whole.
The government did not say if or when curfews would go into effect in the designated areas or describe other rules under the emergency declaration. But the government in Juba is expected to send additional soldiers to the four states. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudanese analysts have different views about the state of emergency declaration. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The state of emergency declaration was announced in a presidential order on state-run radio last night. South Sudan's Deputy Information Minister Akol Paul Kordit says the declaration is aimed at improving security in the four areas.
And I think this will enhance and help the security in the area and give also a conducive environment for the police and local authorities to calm down the security situation there in terms of communal fight. And try to bring into order these unlawful armed young men who are one time carrying out either unlawful killings or cattle wrestling and raiding.
Kordit says the order will restrict movement of civilians during some nighttime hours. He also says security forces will conduct increased patrols to improve security in those areas. James Okuk, a political science lecturer at the University of Juba, says the president's decision to place parts of the country under emergency will increase rights abuses as some security forces will undoubtedly take the law into their own hands under the guise of implementing the president's order.
As I say that, there is a lot of fear when the military is given the authority to respond, given the past experiences that we have with the military. There's a lot of fear that even more violation of human rights could get graver than even it used to be. And those violations of human rights are mostly serious because some of them will amount to war crimes.
Okuk says an emergency declaration should first have been approved by parliament. He hopes MPs will quickly vote to sanction the order as required by law before it is implemented. Okuk says the president's declaration contradicts the national dialogue which his government initiated to end the conflict.
The best mechanism would have been to pursue the dialogue and let the conflicting people talk among themselves. But when you declare the state of emergency, the implication is that the dialogue is suspended. It is the military force now which has to force the people to do what the military want. If they don't do what the military want, then the military can commit a violation of human rights in the name of emergency. And this is where the fear will come, and then no confidence in the military that we have known when they respond to the situation in South Sudan.
But Agustino Ting Mayai, a policy analyst with the Juba-based Soot Institute, says the state of emergency will enable better provision of services to people trapped by crisis in the four areas.
I think the state of emergency announcement is in place. I would have wished, however, that it covers a variety of areas, because the current crisis is not just affecting, especially this, or not just affecting this area's covered so far.
Ting says government authorities should closely monitor the situation to ensure that the order is effectively implemented. He says the emergency declaration would be more effective if it were extended to include former Greater Jonglei and Lake States areas, he says, have seen continuing acts of violence and conflicts. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A veteran South Sudanese journalist says he has joined the SPLM-IO Taban faction to speak out on behalf of the people of Yei River State. Alfred Taban Logune, who has been appointed as Member of Parliament in the Transitional Legislative Assembly, says he has joined politics to bring about much-needed change for the people of Kajokeji. He says South Sudan needs courageous leaders like him in the National Assembly to speak on behalf of the people.
It is my duty to do something about this situation. I cannot stay aloof while my people are suffering either in exile or in the bushes, you know. So that's why I decided that I should do something. I should go to Parliament and raise the voice of the people of Kajukeji.
You are officially now a member of the SPLM-IO Taban faction. Is that correct?
That is correct. Although I don't recognize these divisions within the SPLM. I have been an SPLM member for many, many years, and I still remain SPLM. And the SPLM is right now a unified body. You know, the Arusha Agreement of 2014 made it very clear that the SPLM is no longer split. So there is no SPLM FD, former detainees, SPLM IO, in opposition, or SPLM-IG in government. It is now one SPLM.
But you have Diomatok, who contacted you, who is the Secretary General of SPLM-IO Taban faction, and you have Nunu Jema, who is the Acting Secretary of the SPLM-IG. And then you have Kostima Nube, who speaks on behalf of the former detainees. It looks like the Arusha Agreement is up in the air. It has not been implemented.
Implementation is another thing, and this is the problem in this country. I mean, even the peace agreement that we are now quarreling over, it is because the people have not decided to implement it. Just likewise, the Arusha agreement is not implemented, but it is there.
Alfred Taban, I know that you have been fighting in Khartoum for freedom of speech, you have been fighting in Juba for freedom of speech. Now that you are leaving journalism and joining in politics, where I understand the members of parliament in South Sudan are at the mercy of the executive, do you think you're going to continue fighting in the parliament the way you fight in the media?
I will definitely continue. And to talk about mercy, I mean, even in the media here, we were at the mercy of the government. But I still continue to struggle. And I'm going to take the same struggle to parliament. I'll continue to speak out for the rights of my people, the people of South Sudan. And I will still continue to speak out for the rights of journalists. And I will continue to speak out for the rights of the oppressed. This will continue.
I remember you saying one time that the members of parliament in South Sudan are a rubber stamp. Are you going to become a rubber stamp?
Of course not. And that's what I intend to change. Because I intend to speak out my mind just as I was doing in the media. I will speak out if I see things are not going right.
You're going to be speaking out in the backdrop of a situation where speaking your mind is a crime.
No, I don't see where it's written that speaking out your mind is a crime.
But you have
it's
been,
not a crime, but, it's a right.
But you have been detained. You have been detained for criticizing President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar. You were put in prison, or you were put in detention for some time. Yeah. Human rights groups appealed to the government and you were released. Wasn't that because you spoke your mind?
Yes. I was not released because of human rights people or whatever. I was released because I was in the right, and I will continue to speak out. And that is what also means the same in parliament. I will continue to speak out my mind, and this is my democratic right.
Tell our listeners and tell your people who support you what you are going to do differently in the parliament that other MPs have not done.
Well, I don't know what other MPs have been doing. But for me, definitely, I will continue the struggle. Just as I was doing as a journalist, I will continue in parliament to struggle, you know, for the rights of my people. I will continue to speak out. I'll not keep quiet.
The country is in a situation where the security situation has deteriorated. There is no food. People are going hungry. In any other democracy, members of parliament are supposed to petition the president and ask him what is going on. But that did not happen in South Sudan. So that's an example of what I was saying. The other MPs have not been doing it. What is it that you are going to do different to bring change?
Well, I will definitely, if it's petitioning, yes, I will ensure that for the economic situation, the Minister of Finance is summoned to Parliament, the Minister of Interior is summoned, and all these government ministers are summoned to explain why things are not going well. I will do that.
That's Alfred Taban Logune, a Member of Parliament representing Kajukeji in the SPLM-IO Taban faction. The former journalist was appointed as a Member of Parliament earlier this week. He was speaking to me from Juba today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear from residents in Juba about the recent crackdown on media.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you satisfied with the way your community handles people with mental health issues?
I'm not saying I'm disappointed by it. I think government should do more about it. But put them in an institution so they can take care of them.
No, because it's just mental issues, people everywhere. Just some will even be pushing you. Some will just stand and you not be able to do anything and all this kind of stuff. So no, I am not satisfied with it.
They ignore those people. Whatever they say, they will just say, those people, they are mad. Even if this, what are telling us, will benefit us, but we sometimes we can ignore them. So I'm not satisfied.
We tend to give up on them very fast because, you know, the effects of somebody having a mental issue, always they cause a lot of trouble and they don't act normally.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about the benefits of healthy soil. Agriculture experts have a message for farmers around the world. Take care of your soil, and your soil will take care of you. They say farmers can halt degradation of their land and save money at the same time using techniques known as conservation agriculture. But as VOA Steve Baragona reports, adopting those techniques takes a change of attitude.
This is the vision of modern agriculture. Long rows of green crops on bare earth. Trey Hill's farm looks nothing like that.
If you don't like your fields to look like a mess, it has to kind of grow on you. Yet I have a lot of other owners and peers that are like, wow, what you're doing is really exciting.
What Hill is doing goes against millennia of farming practices. Most farmers everywhere till their fields. They leave soil bare in the off-season. Many plant the same crop year after year. But all three practices wear out the soil. And farms need to produce more to feed a growing population. So experts are backing something called conservation agriculture. It's the focus of a new book, Growing a Revolution. Author David Montgomery spoke to VOA by Skype.
These principles of conservation agriculture flip all three of those ideas on their head. So it's a completely different philosophy to not till, to always have the ground covered with either a commercial crop or a cover crop, and to grow a much more diverse rotation.
Hill plants his crops into the remnants of the previous crop, no tilling. In the off-season, he blankets his fields with diverse cover crops. They hold on to the soil and its nutrients and prevent erosion. The cover crop is not for harvest, it's to feed the soil. University of Maryland soil scientist Ray Weil says these fields will do better in a drought.
This kind of cover, whether it's standing or down here, is going to drastically increase the amount of rain that soaks into the soil.
And Hill says this kind of farming is good for his bottom line. Less tilling means less tractor fuel. He buys less fertilizer because his cover crops feed the soil. He's not organic. He kills his cover crop with herbicides. But Weil says healthy soils do not have to be organic.
These soils are full of life.
And I bet you can go into even a certified organic field. If it's been tilled, you'll never find those kind of things crawling around.
It's not perfect. Hill says these techniques sometimes create new problems.
Actually, this field was planted twice because the slugs ate the beans the first time. Obviously not very cost effective. Seeds expensive. Planters are expensive. Diesel's expensive. So it costs us a lot of money to learn. But we view it all as a learning process.
Experts are working to translate the successes for developing world farmers as climate change and growing populations raise the stakes for agriculture. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Rock Hall, Maryland.
Residents of Juba are criticizing efforts by the government to block access to online news media outlets, including the Sudan Tribune, Radio Tamazuj, Nyamilipedia, and Panluelel. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba residents say they are disappointed that the South Sudan National Communication Authority felt it necessary to block access news websites, especially Sudan Tribune and Radio Tamazuj. Juba resident Robina Foni says she depends on those sites for learning about news developments in South Sudan.
We are deprived of our rights as South Sudanese to know what is happening in the country. It really affects us. It is only this, Juba Monitor and what they, we get information from them, but sometimes it is limited. We need to know a lot about the country, and these are different websites that writes about the country.
Another Juba resident who did not want to be identified for safety reasons says the blocked websites have been a source of news tips for journalists and others in the news business who need to keep abreast of the latest news.
Before I try to open any other tab, I go to Sudan Tribune, Radio Tamazuj, I open. But when I found that the website was closed, I was so disappointed because it gets us some of the information that we cannot access. So despite the other media houses try to get out information, they even get some of the ideas from those websites. But once they are now down like this, it's hard for them to really get some story ideas.
South Sudanese journalist Joyce Evans Lokare says the move is ill-conceived if it is intended to limit access to news and information.
For me as a journalist, Lanu, sometimes I do make my follow-ups through Radio Tamazuj. I read the headlines, so I will come on the ground during editorial meeting, come on, in the beginning, and then I said, oh, I saw this and this, written this and this, so maybe I make a follow-up in such stories.
The South Sudan government denies it had a hand in preventing access to news websites. Akol Paul Kordit is South Sudan's deputy information minister.
We've not shut down any website, and what I know here, we have a serious problem with the ICT infrastructure in the country, and wish we've been working as a ministry responsible for the ICT to see into it that this challenge is met. We have problems not with the mentioned websites, but with all internet-based services.
Cordy says the news websites in question are not registered in South Sudan.
We do not know them. You get them online, but you cannot go to an office of Sudan Tribune anywhere in the Republic of South Sudan. The same applies to Radio Tamazuj. So you can hardly find where they exist, whether they are based in which, whether in Africa or outside Africa, we do not even know.
In the past, South Sudan government officials have accused both the Sudan Tribune and Radio Tamazuj of hostile reporting. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Africans today celebrated the 99th anniversary of former President Nelson Mandela's birthday by doing charitable work for 67 minutes. VOA's Anita Powell caught up with some South Africans doing their part in Pretoria and has this story.
Nelson Mandela dedicated 67 years of his life to actively fighting to make South Africa a better place. 27 of those years were spent in prison for his opposition to the apartheid regime. And so every year on his birthday, South Africans honor the man they regard as the father of the nation through community service. 67 minutes of it. 1 minute for every year of Mandela's sacrifice. In 2009, the United Nations declared July 18th as Nelson Mandela International Day and asked people worldwide to do acts of service on this day. In South Africa, Mandela will always be affectionately known by his clan name, Madiba. This year, 21-year-old university student Dimpo Molefe rolled up her sleeves and rolled mint-green paint on the classroom walls of Viva Village, a non-profit educational compound in Pretoria's Mamelodi Township.
I think it's important because it helps us also just understand that although apartheid has ended, there are people that are still affected by it. Like generations after the struggle are still affected by it. Like there are still kids who can't go to school or who can't get the proper food that they need.
A few kilometers away, Glenton Magahela, manager of Mamelodi's Baraka Educational Foundation, beamed as volunteers gave his classrooms a new coat of paint.
Mandela Day is to go out there and help people, you know, not only this day, but each and every day. But today is his birthday, so all of us need to celebrate him by doing something for other people.
Is 67 minutes enough to achieve anything? Leon Creel, the founder of the nonprofit Viva Foundation, says this one day of service often sets people on a longer path.
It instigates something in the hearts of people. But the majority of this people we will hear from several times in the following year. Because as they come here, their hearts are ignited with a passion for people. And you find them going home and they are never the same.
Many of the children who benefited from Tuesday's volunteer efforts were born during Mandela's late years or after his death. But on his birthday, they offered the following message. Mandela died in 2013 at the age of 95. His death was mourned around the world, and he was eulogized by those who included then-U.S. President Barack Obama. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. President Clear declared a state of emergency for the next 3 months in his home state of Gogriel, where clashes have continued for months between clan-based militias. Information Minister Michael McQuay told Reuters that the South Sudan Army would be granted powers to stop the fighting in Gogriel and that certain citizens' rights would be suspended. He did not elaborate. The other areas under a state of emergency are parts of Tonj, Wao, and Awil East states. Civil society activists fear the move will hinder the work of humanitarian workers operate in those areas. Deputy Information Minister Akol Paul Cordit says the declaration is aimed at improving the security situation in areas where communal fighting exists and to bring order where armed young men have waged deadly attacks. University of Juba political science lecturer James Akok says the declaration will increase rights abuses because some security forces will likely take the law into their own hands. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with the song Sot Al Huria by Egyptian activists.
نزلت وقلت أنا مش راجع وكتبت الدم في كل شارع سمعنا اللي ما كانش سامع واتكسرت كل الموانع سلاحنا كان أحلامنا وبكرة واضح قدامنا من زمان بنستنى بندور مش لاقي مكاننا في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية بينادي في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية بينادي.
We've been listening to the song Sot Al Huria by Egyptian activist. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Let's know what you think about this show. You can drop us an email at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can also get in touch with us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
لو كنت واحد مننا
بلاش ترغي وتقول لنا نمشي ونسيب حلمنا وبطل تقول كلمة أنا.